This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello, and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Recent tragic mass shootings are impacting school safety planning across Wisconsin. Calls to the state's hotline to report concerning incidents are on the rise, yet schools face significant challenges in responding. Here to talk about these challenges are Trish Kilpin, Director of the Office of School Safety and Executive Director of the Wisconsin School Safety Coordinators Association, Tom Wolliver. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Lisa.
All right, let's get started. So there have been these tragic mass shootings in the news, I think on everyone's mind, particularly when it comes to school safety, is the Uvalde shooting on May 24th, where 22 people died, including 19 children. How have mass incidents like this impacted school safety planning in Wisconsin? We'll start first with Trish.
Well, first, when a new incident occurs of school violence, it really threatens people's perceptions about schools and the fact that their children are in schools in our state, all of the students in our state are attending schools, and it makes us feel more vulnerable. Really, schools are pretty safe places to be, and most violent acts occur outside of schools, but we have a huge responsibility to make sure that our schools are safe. And when our children are there, we're really acting in place of the parent, a concept called in loco parentis. And so we want to make sure that we are being responsive. After the incident in Uvalde, we had an increase in people contacting our office, partly because they wanted technical assistance and support about students they were concerned about. Schools wanted help with how to make sure they were preventing an act of violence from occurring in that school. And we also had an increase in contacts from our office because people started to think about the fact that perhaps they've been worried that a student could be someone who might be on a pathway to violence, and they were kind of dismissing that and not reporting it. And the enormity of the consequence that happened with that school shooting really motivated people to contact us so that they can get help for the student and prevent violence.
Tom, I know you have a member organization and you provide technical assistance to schools around Wisconsin. What sort of calls were you getting maybe after the Uvalde incident?
Absolutely. Anytime there's a horrific incident like Uvalde, it's really an opportunity for schools to revisit their emergency operations plans or school safety plans. For instance, one of the things that we're going to be doing over the next 2 months is holding some discussion groups with our membership and others to talk about what changes in school safety planning have some of our districts already implemented or contemplated, as well as opportunities for others with questions to ask a panel of experts, our member experts, you know, going ahead of what they did, what they're doing differently going into this next school year to be better prepared for these horrific incidents.
Well, as we've been talking about, school shootings, unfortunately, on the rise. We're looking at some data from the Gun Violence Archive. The organization tracks gun violence incidents through information they collect through law enforcement, media, government, other sources. From January to July 2022, they identified four school shooting incidents across the country in which 28 people were killed, 79 injured. Trish, are school shootings something in our society that we're just going to have to live with, or are they truly preventable?
They are truly preventable. Our office promotes comprehensive school safety, which looks at the five REMS mission areas. And when I say REMS, I'm talking about the readiness and emergency management for schools of prevention, protection, mitigation, response, and recovery. And we know that the safest schools are simultaneously employing all five of those mission areas. So we need to be able to prevent violence from occurring by building cultures where kids feel that their school is safe, where we have universal measures in place to protect our buildings, where we, one, when we become aware that there is a problem, we have effective and efficient ways to intervene to decrease the likelihood that harm will occur. And then we look at response and recovery as well. We know that there is no one way to make sure that violence does not occur. We have to make sure we're having a multifaceted approach that focuses on all five of those mission areas at the same time in order to prevent violence from occurring.
Tom, do you foresee a day or where we could have a year without any school shootings? Is it possible to increase capacity to make that happen?
Certainly, we can't control, it's somewhat out of our control. But as Trish had mentioned, is, focusing on that prevention and mitigation aspect of not only school shootings, but other events that would significantly impact our schools. To not only hopefully focus on preventing them, but also in the event that an event does occur, to decrease the impact of that event on the occupants of the school, families, and community.
Trish, have threats, serious threats to Wisconsin schools been increasing?
Well, I can give you information about the threats that we know about. Because while we are able to prevent violence from occurring, we first have to know about indicators that suggest that there could be a problem. And that really comes from the community at large and our students being able to report when something is of concern, shifting that mindset from tattling or snitching to help seeking, getting preventing violence from happening and getting people the help that they need and deserve. We know that in just this year alone, through our anonymous reporting system called Speak Out Wisconsin, which is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week tip line that we run through our office, that just this, since January, we've been informed of 12 planned school attacks that we were able to intervene on and give that information to the local school as well as law enforcement to prevent violence from occurring.
Do you have examples of where your school districts, a member districts, have become aware of planned school threats and school violence, where good school planning has thwarted that?
Tom, do you mind if I
not
jump in there?
Go ahead, Trish. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We actually have, I'm not going to name any specific school districts, but we have had several schools that we've been supporting as they work through implementing appropriate strategies to prevent violence. And part of that includes threat assessment. So threat assessment and threat management is the process of understanding the context of a potential threat and how we are going to prevent that violence from occurring by developing a management plan to do so. So we train people across the state in threat assessment, both law enforcement and school officials. And through that process of helping them understand how to do a threat assessment and threat management plan and how to utilize the forms that we created within our department, we actually created the Wisconsin State Threat Assessment and Management Protocol. Having that available to teams helps them have a framework in which to respond. It's not sufficient just to know that a child has done something that could be concerning. We really have to understand the context of what has happened. And then we have to know exactly what we're going to do that's going to make sure that our school is safe and the individual gets the support to keep themselves safe. So we have recently had a school, through our anonymous reporting system, we had several what we call duplicate tips. So we had numerous people in one school reporting the same concern that a potential peer was planning an act of school violence. And that really suggests to me a healthy reporting culture where many people have seen something and they're gonna say something. There was a report done through NTAC and the Department of Ed, and NTAC is the National Threat Assessment Center. And that report, it was really clear that when they looked at at incidents of school violence, 93% of the time, somebody had concern about that individual who ended up engaging in school violence, that they were in need of help and support. And 81% of the time, someone had actual knowledge of the attacker's plan. So we have to create environments of help seeking. We have to have that as a norm within our schools and our communities, because we can only prevent violence if we have the information that we need to do so.
You've been talking about the reporting culture, and we had just had up on the screen the most recent data from the Speak Up, Speak Out hotline that you've been referencing, and showing kind of what people have been reporting. I think since the hotline went live in September 2020, there have been over 3,700 total reports. And just between January and July 7th of this year, the reports clearly bullying, cyberbullying, the leading type of incident that's being reported, followed then closely by, or not really closely, but inappropriate conduct, drugs, suicide threats, self-harm, depression, anxiety. We're not showing all of the threats, but some of maybe the more common ones that people might think about. Can you, Trish, can you talk about how does the Office of School Safety respond when these sorts of incidents come in? It's a lot of incidents to try to respond to. What is it that your staff is able to do?
We have a highly trained staff that's able to connect with that person who is making the report, whether they're a tipster reporting something of concern, or whether they're an individual in need of that help. We're able to dialogue with them in real time, provide them, validate what they're going through, provide them with resources. And then importantly, if there is some kind of threat or imminent threat or a rule violation, law violation, we're able to get that information in real time to the schools and to local law enforcement in order to prevent further tragedy from occurring. When we look at threat assessment and we look at the indicators that someone could be on a pathway towards violence and planning a planned school attack, we know it often starts with a grievance or an upset, that the person who is thinking of engaging in violence is upset about the way they've been treated or something that's occurring. So while the kind of flashy numbers come when you look at that data from our Speak Up, Speak Out about the number of planned school attacks or maybe someone about a weapon or things like that, we feel that it's equally powerful when we intervene when someone's being bullied, when someone's being harassed, when someone is contemplating suicide, when somebody is experiencing child abuse or depression. And all of those entry points are able to create a healthier school culture. We really try to employ a public health approach to school safety. So we want to provide universal access to support and information to keep all schools safe. And then for those who are experiencing some difficulties, making sure that we decrease that risk, promote protective factors. And then for those who are actually contemplating being violent, we want to have very specific case management plans to prevent that. And our SUSO of Anonymous Reporting System allows us to help with all of that.
Tom, I know that's part of the work that your organization does, walking in and kind of spending time looking at the school's climate, right? Is that a majority of what you think is important?
Absolutely. Our association does comprehensive school safety and security assessments, and a large component of that is looking, as Trish had mentioned, the culture and climate of the school and those adult-student relationships and the ability and comfortableness of students to talk with an adult, responsible adult at school regarding things that are concerning them and their fellow students. And that's a critical component, not just looking at the physical school and the security elements and the processes, procedures, the security systems that the schools have put in place, but really that culture and climate that Trish referenced is critically important, and having a positive climate and culture where students are comfortable talking with adults in that school.
Schools do have some additional funding, at least over the past year or two, to support school safety planning. They can use COVID relief dollars on things like school safety hardware. They can use funding from the new bipartisan school and gun safety law that was just passed, as soon as that's available, to support security hardware training. in Uvalde, experts testified that some of those kind of hardware security measures, the automatic locking doors, failed. Should schools be still investing in some of those hardware security measures, Trish?
Absolutely. The reason that we drill, that we have drills in schools, is to practice and ensure and have that continuous feedback loop to make sure that we're solving problems. So if part of the drill or that month or that safety assessment is to check those doors, make sure that they lock behind them. And then we go back, it's not a one and done. We go back and improve our safety planning based on what we learn. And that's why we're so appreciative of the work that the Wisconsin School Safety Coordinators Association does with the site assessments and supporting schools with that. Likewise, we have recently hired some school safety consultants with some their limited term positions that were created after the Legislative Audit Bureau recommended that we improve the practices of giving feedback to schools about what would really work for school safety. So as you may know, in Act 143, schools are required to submit 5 documents to us annually. And we really weren't looking at the quality of those documents and making, you know, real-time, effective, giving them feedback about what some model practices would be. So our office has recently obtained the resources through ARPA funds to hire those limited-term employees to digest and look at and be able to give some coaching to schools. We're really interested in reducing barriers to school safety and improving everyone's practices.
Tom, Lisa, just to pick up on that point very quickly, related to our schools have become much more dependent on technology and responding to incidents. And it's critically important that they evaluate those systems, particularly when they interact with other systems, to avoid single points of failure in those systems. And having developed backup systems in the event of a failure of a critical system in response to an incident, it's particularly important communications. And as we know, oftentimes when an event goes south, it has to do with a breakdown in communications, whether that's a breakdown in the physical technology of communications or the process of communications that school system has set up amongst its staff as well as with the emergency responders.
Since the Uvalde shooting, politicians have been weighing in on ways to maybe make Wisconsin schools safer. And one of the ideas that has been making headlines is whether or not we should be arming teachers. Trish, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, arming teachers is really not a prevention strategy, it's a mitigation strategy, right? So it's we already have a problem and now what we're going to do about it. I would really like to shift that conversation towards one of the mindset of prevention, where we're talking about long before someone brings a weapon to school, how we can prevent a violent act from occurring. Because even if an incident occurs at school that does not result in a school shooting, it can be super traumatic for those who witness such an event. And we want to make sure that our public health approach, where we're preventing violence, is our first thought. There is no one solution to making sure school violence does not happen, right? We have to have that multi-phased approach, a comprehensive school safety approach, including those mission areas. And also, we have to consider physical and psychological safety for our children and our school staff.
Tom, there's been a shift away a little bit from having law enforcement officers in schools. People have mixed feelings about that. Do you have an opinion on the effectiveness of placing a law enforcement officer in a school to increase safety?
Well, I think having school resource officers in schools can definitely be a benefit, but I do think that's critically important that those role of the school resource officers be very clear up front, and collaboration with local emergency responders, and particularly with law enforcement, is critically important in developing effective school safety plans. And you know, a big part of that is awareness and those relationships with students and law enforcement. And school resource officers can be an effective tool to help build those relationships and create a positive engagement and relationship with students. But as Trish mentioned before, it's a multifaceted approach, and the utilization of school resource officers is only one prong in that comprehensive, multifaceted approach.
Trish, you mentioned this a little bit ago, that in the original legislation, 2017 Act 143, that created the Office of School Safety, that schools were required to submit a blueprint of their building to local law enforcement and the Office of School Safety. And recently there was a bill that passed in the legislature to update what's provided by schools. Can you talk a little bit about that update?
Absolutely. We have released the funds for Act 109. Which is available on our website for those who are interested.
And this is new. This is breaking news, right, Trish?
Breaking news, yes. So Act 143 does require schools to submit blueprints, both to our office and to local law enforcement. We know that technology has vastly improved in regard to the type of map that can be created. And so Act 109 really looks at that digital mapping, and that provides information in a very serious incident like we're talking about today, about school violence, but also for any type of incident. If someone's having a health emergency and they're outside of the pool, and if we want to get that information to the first responder so they can pull up to the most appropriate entrance and they can access that patient as efficiently and quickly as possible. And so these types of maps that are being created with these grant funds are ones that have the technology piece is there's such real-time access to that information. It's got grids, kind of like a battleship grid of where everything is in the school. And so our law enforcement partners have been telling us that this is going to be helpful, and this is what they feel could save time and save lives. And so we have responded to that, and the legislature has responded to that and unanimously voted to enact Act 109, which created these funds. As we were discussing earlier, sometimes in the past, we haven't always looked at the quality of those submissions. And so we wanted to make sure that we were reducing barriers to people submitting those maps. So the first 14 days of this grant period, which is right now, priority funding goes to those schools who have never submitted a map before. We really want to make sure that we're decreasing those barriers and increasing the likelihood that they're able to communicate with their law enforcement partners and provide that digital mapping.
Another new resource that I know will be available to schools in the fall are this critical incident response teams, is that correct? That
it
there's
is.
Been some regional training going on to put those in place. Tom, how do you think regional crisis incident response teams are going to help schools?
It's definitely a need out there. With the number of small and medium-sized and rural school districts in our state, they simply do not have the resources in terms of a comprehensive response and particular recovery from an incident. So I think Wisconsin's approach to the Office of School Safety to create these regional response and recovery teams is critically important to supporting our particular small and medium-sized school districts. And also, it helps bridge that connection with community resources that are available. But having a trained team to be able to do that is critically important. And I believe that Wisconsin is one of the first, or if not one of the first states in the United States to be able to take this approach.
Yeah, Lisa, we're able to initiate this project through a federal grant, and we have created 12 teams, as you mentioned, that are regionally, that are correspond to each school CISA area. And this summer, we had academies where I and several other people trained the teams in order to respond in ways that are evidence-informed, that decrease the likelihood that students will experience psychological trauma, and that promote recovery more quickly. So we know once a school incident does occur, that we need to reaffirm people's sense of safety, and then we need to respond in very specific ways in order to decrease the likelihood that people have psychological trauma symptoms that endure. And so the curriculum for the training really provides that. Our teams are comprised of law enforcement, of mental health folks, chaplains, retired teachers, all different people who are interested in promoting recovery. And so we're super proud of our teams. This is a federally funded grant, and we're hoping that we'd be able to continue our work with this critical incident response project in the future, which would require some more permanency of funds for our office.
Trish, you've mentioned funding a few times, and a lot of the work of the Office of School Safety is now being supported by one-time funding or temporary federal grants. What would be your request to the legislature in terms of really enhancing school safety across Wisconsin?
Really, in the next biennium, I'm confident that we'll see a request to fund our office with stable funding to be able to continue the powerful work that we've been doing and be able to meet the needs of our communities. We are very appreciative of the grants that have been made available to schools. We want to broaden that and really be able to provide technical assistance and support, staff that 24/7 resource center, and provide schools with their just-in-time answers to questions that they have about school safety. And so we're hopeful that we'll be able to have that predictable, stable funding in the future.
Tom, schools have other challenges, not just funding, in terms of ensuring school safety. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And as you spoke to, Trish, about the funding aspect, one of the largest needs I think that we see is there's only a handful of school districts and schools in the state that have full-time or majority of a person's time devoted in terms of overseeing school safety and security. For instance, you've got small school districts where the superintendent's wearing many hats, one of which is school safety and security. And so what we can do as a state to help support additional resources, staff time, and staff to be able to coordinate school safety and security at the local level is a huge need. And I think one thing that will really strengthen the school, our safety of our schools in our state, if we can do that. Yes, it's a reach, but I do think that's critically important to be able to devote the time and effort really needed to make, continue to build upon the safety of our schools and our state.
As this has become more of a political issue, certainly going to be an election issue in the fall across Wisconsin, Trish, what would you like policymakers really to know and understand about school safety?
As I've mentioned a few times today, I just would love people to understand and appreciate that comprehensive school safety is never a single approach, that it requires us balancing psychological safety, physical safety, and then simultaneously working on those pieces of prevention, protection, mitigation, response, and recovery. Using that public health approach, I think, is critical to decreasing the likelihood that our schools are places where students experience trauma.
Tom, what can you say about what you're seeing in terms of staff burnout or staffing shortages in school, mental health needs of students and staff that impact the effectiveness of school planning?
The COVID-19 pandemic had a tremendous impact on our schools in terms of both student and staff mental health and stress. And we've seen substantially increased levels of staff retirements and resignations over the past two school years, with that anticipated to continue at this rate in the near future. And what are we doing as local school districts and schools, as well as the state, to help support those needs, those mental health needs of our students and staff, and get back to some sense of a new normalcy, so to speak, and what we can do as schools and the state to help support those mental health needs of our students, and do it in a coordinated fashion. As Trish mentioned before, it really is that collaborative approach, that multifaceted approach that we would like to see happen in the future. And we invite our elected officials to participate in this process. We've got a lot of experience, a lot of talent in our state that can help address this need. And we would welcome our elected officials to participate in this discussion to help us build upon what we've already accomplished.
We want to show information here on the screen about where folks can find more resources. We're showing the number for the Speak Up, Speak Out hotline. Trish, what will people find if they go to your website? What's important for community members to educate themselves about?
That we have a four-pronged approach to school safety, that when we look at that, you can find that right on our website, that people can access support for critical incidents as they're concerned about them. We have that anonymous reporting system. We teach about threat assessment, and then we can also provide general school safety guidance. We really have a comprehensive program, and we encourage any stakeholders to engage, interact with us if they're interested in this work.
All right. We'll end it there. Thank you both for joining this important conversation today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it.
Sure. And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we sit down with the decision makers and highlight the issues that impact all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.